Chapter 19. I didn't answer Vella when she called through the solid wood, and instead I waited for the telltale sound of her heels clicking away before I flung open the door in order to catch her off guard. "What?" I barked, and I shoved away the slight pang of regret when the already frazzled cockatoo woman jumped sky-high at the harshness of my tone.
"Oh!"
She whirled around and clutched her fingers together, and then she nervously smoothed an imaginary wrinkle out of her formal black and silver maidservant's dress.
I'm terribly sorry to disturb you, Alex."
"Lord Brightwood," I corrected in a deep and solid voice, and I had to steel myself at the sight of her casting her eyes to the floor.
"Of course, Lord Brightwood,"
she said, and the way she said it sounded awkward and clunky, so I shot her a severe look. She flinched again like I'd just whipped her or something, and I knew the message had been received. As much as I hated to be an asshole, she really needed to get with the program on the title thing, Hasta Fuckity Now, just like me, so it was necessary to be harsh. I decided I'd gleaned enough about Krev to do a decent job, and really I just had to stick with the arrogance and entitlement shtick, topped with a little hard-ass and a side of cruel. But I also needed to make sure I wasn't being overly malicious to my crew. So in instances like now in which Vella shifted on her feet like she was waiting for more orders, I merely stood there in silence while I glared at her. "What do you need?" I finally asked, with a hint of cold steel in my emotionless tone.
"There seems to be, something happened when Soaring was on her way back to us, and it seems as if our people did a last-minute rescue of Councilman Sharkane's ship,"
she said, and at the narrowing of my glare, she added a hasty,
"My lord."
"Well then," I drawled and crossed my arms over my chest. "You had better make sure this place is suitable for guests."
Of course, my lord,"
she said, and bowed deeply before turning on her heels so she could get the hell out of my presence and make herself useful. But I had to stop her again. "Velrala, make sure no one goes inside the library, including yourself. If I find this rule has been broken, there will be consequences."
"Yes, my lord,"
she said. And finally, I released her from my thunderous gaze so she could scurry away. I sighed as I watched her practically run away from me, and I allowed my shoulders to slump inward for a moment.
"Alex?"
Zoe's voice from the other end of the corridor behind me made me snap my spine up straight. And with only a millisecond to swallow around the tightness building in my throat, I whirled around. "That's gotta stop," I said, in the same stone-cold voice I used with Vel. The Catwoman froze mid-stride, and her ears perked forward.
"What has to?"
"You may only refer to me as my lord or husband from here on out," I said, while I slowly stalked toward her. And when I got close enough, I snapped my hand out and firmly gripped the back of her neck. "Understand?" Her ears flattened submissively, and her eyes dilated when I squeezed her soft nape.
Yes, husband,"
she stammered, and I gave her a stare in which I prayed she saw through. "I shouldn't have to remind you how to act," I stated with emphasis on the last word, in the hopes she would remember our whispered conversation the night before. And when some of the tension leaked out of her, I knew she was playing along more than really acting afraid.
"Apologies, my lord,"
she said after I let her go.
"I'm here to get you ready and escort you off the Manta ship so we may greet our guests and receive our people."
A knot of unease detangled from my solar plexus at the sight of her affecting the proper airs for our placating. And I realized with her at my side, as well as Horus, I could more than get through this. "Very well," I said, and gestured for her to take her place behind me into the right, where the first wife in a duelist's harem belonged. I then led us up to the armory, where there was quite a collection of antique and ostentatious armor. Gela never wore anything so flashy, so that was why it was a surprise when Horus told me he would have the stuff he'd packed away in the ballroom transferred back here. I was expecting something basic and tired. But when Zoe and I entered the updated armory, I was stunned. Several suits of the most exquisite armor lined the walls from their own custom mounts, and I almost broke character at the sight because my first inclination was to lock eyes with Zoe and grin. Instead, I marched to the middle of the room and decided an exercise between us would be apt.
Husband?
My catwife faltered when I continued to stand in the middle of the room with a bored yet anticipatory expression on my face. It was tempting to just drop the act for a moment, especially since we were alone and unlikely to be disturbed. But with the rogue auger being so close, I didn't want to chance it. If the rogue was casting his feelers out for anything suspicious, the walls of this room wouldn't prevent him from discovering inconsistencies with the narrative I was going to paint once I came across them face to face. So I rolled my eyes and huffed. Ugh. Pick one, I drawled, like having to actually speak what was on my mind was an inconvenience of the highest caliber. And hurry up about it. I don't have all day.
Of course, my lord,
Zoe said, and began to peruse the selection with a discerning eye. Finally, she found an ensemble that was a perfect blend of opulent and fearsome, and the only cue I gave her that the real me was under here was the small smile I allowed myself to give her before I wiped it away so fast it could have been confused for a cruel smirk. "Dress me," I commanded, and I held my arms out like the entitled fuck I was trying to be. My catwife merely nodded and went about fulfilling my request in silence. The first thing she did was remove my current clothes until I was bare, and then she clothed me in some sheer linen small clothes so some of the heavy armor and rougher materials wouldn't chafe certain areas. After this was done, she clothed my lower half in durable yet soft leather trousers, with a vibrant red tunic trimmed in gold embroidery. Then she covered my thighs and shins with a tougher leather that had been tanned to a stiff, hard shell, which was lighter than metal and felt twice as strong. Around my waist, she buckled an armored belt that came down to my knees and had designs of several fierce battles worked into the leather, and everything was inlaid with brass rivets. The breastplate was of a similar design, but in a dark crimson leather, and it featured something resembling a dragon's head in the center. And finally, the pauldrons came last with their black leather, brass studs, and spikes. Altogether, especially with my rugged beard growth and hair approaching the stringy side from how much I had been running my fingers through it, I looked like I could pull off the mix of harsh and insane I was going for. "Is that what you're wearing?" I asked, as I eyed her basic armored corset combo she was fond of.
"Does it not please you, my lord?"
she asked, even though she knew it did. According to the annals, a first wife should be clothed in only the finest materials unless she is being punished. "You know you are out of line," I stated with a growl, but instead of becoming cowed, or at least pretending to, Zoe held my mock angry glare and actually stepped into my space even further.
"You are absolutely right,"
she breathed, and I barely had time to register the dark look in her dilated eyes as arousal before she stepped back.
"I must rectify my actions."
"See that you do," I replied, and swallowed around my suddenly dry throat. My catwife bowed and then went to excuse herself from my presence.
"I will change into something more appropriate and meet you in the entrance hall."
I nodded and watched her go. What had just happened? Did I misread something? Because for a moment there, I could have sworn I saw a spark of something in her sapphire blue eyes. I couldn't help being turned on slightly at the thought of her getting into this little scene we'd been forced into. And with that in mind, maybe there was something we could explore further, especially in the bedroom. But now was not the time, and I needed to focus, so I pulled my metaphysical armor around my real one and left the chamber. The hall was deserted, as if even the stowaway critters aboard the Manta ship were afraid to draw attention to themselves if I happened to come along. The tension I managed to create with the help of Horace and Zoe, no doubt, had already blanketed the entire manor from top to bottom, and I haven't even made it downstairs yet. When I entered the main antechamber where the entrance hall was, I was a little surprised at how Vella, Bowden, Rylan, and Shay were already waiting there against the wall taking instructions from Horace. The man had timed his terrified speech about making sure everyone followed protocol right as I walked up behind him, so his act would be even more believable.
Master! Horace nervously yelped. I didn't see you there. Have a nice sleep.
Shut up, servant, I spat, and I tried not to let Shay's dagger-like stare penetrate my diamond exterior, but my skin crawled. There are going to be some changes around here. The way things were will no longer be how they've been.
Alex, what's gotten into you?
Shay started with a pleading expression, and I snapped my head in her direction and pinned her with a look so cold she stopped mid-sentence.
You will refer to me as Milord, wife, I snarled.
But internally, I wanted to throw the whole silly act right out the window the second her emerald eyes filled with tears.
Do as he says, Shelia,
Zoe intoned from the top of the stairs, and everyone ogled the Catwoman as she slowly descended. As for me, it was the hardest test yet, because Zoe had changed into the degrading, skimpy outfit I first saw her in, which was the black singlet G-string thing and her thigh-high boots so she could crawl around on the floor. I didn't even know she'd kept the garment I actually hated. But when she reached the bottom of the stairs, got on all fours, and crawled submissively up to me looking so gorgeous like that, I suddenly had to reevaluate my said hatred.
Wife,
I managed to push out through my voice roughened with lust. The gravel sound my vocal folds made covered me because it still sounded like I was displeased.
Does my punishment please you, husband?
She asked with that unfair little pout, and I had to clench my jaw when I realized what she was doing. I glared harder at her. It will suffice.
Zoe!
Shay gasped, and Horace shushed her by covering her mouth with his hand and whispering frantically into her ear. I couldn't be 100% certain, but I knew, based on how pale her face suddenly became, that he must have been cluing her in on the reason for my behavior. Or at least the reason we came up with, which was how I had been eaten by Krev after all and was just putting on a performance until now.
Quiet, or I will punish Zoe for your misdemeanors, I said, as I glared at Shay coldly, and she shrank back. The reality is Alex Brightwood is no more. And if you don't want me to do what I did to, Mr. Jenner, then you will abide by me without question.
How dare you!
Rylan finally burst out, and I grinned cruelly in his direction. Perfect.
Servant! I barked.
And Horace stepped dutifully forward.
Throw the whelp into the dungeon. That'll teach him to talk out of turn.
The Falcon Man did as he was told and wrestled Rylan out of the entrance hall. Knowing him, he would probably just take the kid back to his room and lock the door like he had with Nova, hopefully. At least I knew he would be safe for the time being, and he wouldn't be able to pull any more stupid stunts.
Come on, Riley, Horace said in a tone that brooked no argument. Make sure he's locked up tight, I said.
But with Horace's subtle wink, I could tell he knew what I meant.
And don't forget about my daughter, either. She must be safe and kept away from our guests, just in case.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the second part of our plan take effect, which was called, We All Really Needed to Convince Shay That Something Happened to the Real Alex After All. Title pending. Like both Horace and I had discussed when we strategized earlier, if Shay was the one who brought the whole act down to her core, then her naturally emotive nature might be strong enough to mask any suspicions Zoe might be trying to piece together in her clever brain. The fact she was trying to get me to break character in such a naughty way was testament to how she was trying to figure out the plot before the other shoe dropped. Maybe she really did need to be punished. Focus, Alex. The point was, if Shay's passionate emotions were left to rage like the wildfire she was, she just might burn hot enough to block out the rogue's sight. I was counting on the fact it worked kind of like wearing night vision goggles in a room where someone set off a flash bomb. I was hoping my phoenix wife would shine like the sun like she normally did and blind the powerful augur's remote knowing powers by blasting him upside the head with her fervor.
Daughter.
Shay trailed off as she fit the pieces together, and her eyes slowly began to widen.
What is going on? Did You and Nova plan to do something to Alex.
You're smart. I grinned coldly in that odd, broken doll way I saw the real Krev do when he was wearing Yates's face. And my wife physically recoiled from me. She gasped, and her hands flew to her mouth so she could stifle the sob that wanted to burst forth.
And you're a monster,
she said, as the despair of resignation crept into her eyes. I could tell she wanted to act out, but the sight of Zoe on her knees stalled her, so she stepped back in line with her head bowed. That's more like it, I said, even though I winced internally. While we have our guests here, we will be a model household. Is that clear? I tracked my cold gaze around and made sure to make eye contact with those bold enough to lift their eyes from the ground. Master Brightwood? Bowden finally piped up after he swallowed tightly. What shall I tell our chef to make for the midday meal? As long as it's not that drivel from last night, tell him he can do as he pleases. Oh, and send his Okoba brother away, I said casually, like I just thought of it when in reality this was phase three of our plan, in which I send Ozzy away. But Horace intercepts him at the property line and tells him to go back to the forest for help. This place is only big enough for one bumbling simpleton. Yes, my lord, Bowden said, and scurried off to go find Arvid and Ozzy. I felt Shay's molten eyes send flaming darts in my direction. But when I looked at her, she was back to staring at her feet. Little rebel. I could almost see the defiance rolling off her in waves, and I hoped Zoe and Horace would help her tamp down that rebelliousness so she wouldn't get us into trouble. Now that everything has been cleared up, come, wives, I ordered with an arrogant snap of my fingers. And the two of them took their appropriate places just behind me on either side. I snapped my fingers again for Vela to get the doors of the entrance hall for us, and when they opened, the sunlight came pouring into the corridor. It was such a glorious day, and it honestly made me sick. It was somehow unfair that such a dark day full of tension should be this bright and happy, almost as if the sky itself was mocking me. It was like having a funeral on the first day of spring when everything should be dreary and dark. Or, like Alanis Morissette always said about irony and rain on wedding days, or something. If that rain was fucking lemon juice and I was covered in paper cuts, then, yeah, like that. Either was an apt description for how much of a waste this perfect day was going to be while I had to act all evil and shitty. And by the time the heavy drawbridge on the aft deck of the Manta ship was lowered to the pier, I was in a properly sour mood, which was perfect since I needed to get into character. The only thing that made it tolerable was plotting the revenge burning like hot coals in the place where my lungs and heart used to be. First thing was to lure the pirate captain and thereby his rogue into a false sense of security by acting like spoiled Traveler Brightwood. Then, if everything went well, and depending on how much information I could get him to tell me about his master, Kavo Alda, I would then reveal I was actually Krev, if it served my purposes. Either way the dominoes toppled, I had to be ready to play off any scenarios until I was certain I could take him out, either in a duel or otherwise. I took a deep breath as my anger mounted and caused my senses to sharpen and my muscles to tense at the ready. The wrath coursing through my veins like streams of fire gave me the clarity and wit I needed to feel confident that I could take whatever they could dish at me. I left myself enough ambiguous avenues or chess moves to be able to give myself plenty of exits. But once we started this Rube Goldberg machine, it was still up to fate. Regardless, I knew one thing with absolute certainty. The people who had the misfortune of putting me in this fucked-up situation would pay one way or another. My anger spiked in sadistic pleasure at all of the ways I thought of extracting such a payment. And I suddenly reminded myself I needed to rein in my swelling temper. The rage helped only so much, and I had to tell myself I merely wanted to redirect the lightning, not harness it in a way that would spite myself in the end. Somehow, if I pictured my position as being beholden to an extremist authoritarian culture, like the Fire Nation in Last Airbender, It made it easier to pull the wool over everyone's eyes in such a mean way because I knew I was setting myself up to win the war in the long run. But in order to win the war, sometimes a battle or two needed to be lost. And as much as I wanted to charge in guns blazing, I couldn't take that chance. As if Amaya had heard the turmoil in my very spirit, I felt a tug at the internal bond we shared between us.
"Stay strong, my lovely,"
her whippoorwill-like voice echoed through my head like a forest dryad, and I furtively darted my gaze around the dock to see where it had come from. Sure enough, I caught sight of Amaya's flaxen hair shining in the sun like silver as she followed in her sister's wake. Her sister, Anwar, looked almost unrecognizable in a gaudy purple dress and high-heeled boots that were a far cry from her practical style of dress. She also had her autumn hair done up in a multitude of braids that looked almost ceremonial as they twined around her large ibex-like horns. But what truly made her look like a stranger was the expression she wore on her usually placid face, a grimace of a smile that looked as painful as it did unnatural as she hung on the arm of a man who could only be the rogue. I couldn't be bothered to give the guy a second look at this moment because I was enraptured with the sight of my... fuck it. My third. My wife. Even though Amaya looked beat down and haggard, our bond thrummed stronger and stronger with every step we took toward one another. Just the feeling of her silent support, and the realization she was putting on an act too, by appearing more weak than actually she was, gave me another confidence boost. And when my crew and I finally stood face to face with the pirate captain and his group of injured souls, I was more than ready to fucking rumble. The captain, who resembled a fat red panda, was instantly recognizable in his ill-fitting silk robes. If I hadn't been told ahead of time about the man's scheme to replace the overseer, it still would have been obvious he was wearing clothes he wasn't used to because he kept stumbling over the hem at his feet. If he was really an aristocrat who could afford such finery, then he would have had that tailored perfectly to his exact size. "It appears as if you were in need of my assistance," I asked in a cold voice with an arched eyebrow, and I mentally reminded myself of the plan again. Lure them in first, and then...
"So,"
the red-bearded panda man said after he received a nod from the hooded rogue, who still clutched Anwar's hand in his elbow.
"It seems as if Brightwood really is your vessel now, after all."
My brain froze for a second. What was he going on about? "Did you have any doubt?" I stalled.
"Ha! For a second I did!"
The pirate captain barked out a rough laugh that sounded like a rusty socket wrench.
"You've heard of how crafty the traveler Brightwood can be. He has thus far eluded everyone who has tried to interfere with his rise to power. And given what Kavos spread about you throughout the clans, he claims that you have turned away from seeking duelist status. And yet here you are, back to your old ways, Krev."
Krev? Oh. Oh, shit. He already thought I was Krev, which meant he'd been involved in the plot from the beginning. Which also meant Krev was expecting him so they could complete whatever plan it was they had together. A plan in which I did not know the ending of, much beyond my scheduled demise that didn't actually go as scheduled. I let a cocky grin spread out on my face to hide the fact my mind was grasping at straws. How did that saying go from that weird Scottish poem I had to read one time for high school English class? Oh, how the best-laid plans of mice and men often went fucking ass up. Yeah, something like that.